Trojan fans, it's time for another installment of the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast. We give you the inside scoop on everything about USC football recruiting from the experts who know what they're talking about. Which players have an offer, which ones don't, who the coaches like, and who our experts like. And now, here are your co-hosts for the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and USCFootball.com national recruiting analyst Gerard Martinez.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Trojan Blast Recruiting Podcast, talking with Gerard Martinez from USCFootball.com, our national recruiting analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at GMartLive. We wanted to do another recruiting show since the season is over. The Trojans finished 5-7. Now the focus is going to be on the coaching staff and, of course, this recruiting class. And if, don't forget, the early signing period starts December 19th, so only a few weeks away. It's crazy how fast it's upon us, and that's why these coaching changes are going to be very important, because a huge chunk of this recruiting class is likely going to sign just before Christmas. So you want to get those people in place, and recruits want to know who the coach is going to be and all that kind of fun stuff. So we're going to talk about all of that. And we got a bunch of questions from you, the listeners out there, about this USC recruiting class. We'll get Gerard to answer all those. So let's welcome him in. The man of the hour, Gerard Martinez. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Hopefully it'll be the man of the hour. It could be the man of the hour and a half. Because we have obviously some things to cover, overlapping a little bit of recruiting and team speak, because, well, all these coaching changes are obviously impacting both sides. So we're going to kind of try to sort it out a little bit for you guys, try to kind of give you a status on what things are like right now and kind of going forward, seeing how things are going to sort of unravel.
Yeah, we'll do that, and we'll break down each coach. So five coaches in total are no longer on the staff that were as of a month or so ago. So we're going to talk about each one of them and the recruiting impact and all that kind of stuff. So we'll break them down. We're going to start one by one, just going over the news of yesterday, because it was a flurry of news. I don't know what you were doing, Gerard. I woke up and I thought it was going to be like a regular day. I had a lot of radio scheduled because there was still reaction to Clay Helton being retained. So I had a whole bunch of radio slots and stuff lined up. I went, did a workout in the morning, and I was just like, oh, it's going to be kind of relaxing. I get back, and then obviously all hell broke loose, and we start hearing, okay, the purge is happening. It was a pretty nutty, like, we've had a lot of nutty days covering this team, recruiting and all that stuff. That was one of the nuttier ones, I think.
Yeah, it was a crazy day. It started just before, I think, 9 o'clock, and I started hearing that Kenichi Odizi had been let go, that he had made some calls to some recruits, and that he basically said that he was no longer going to be coaching at USC, which was a bit of a surprise, certainly a surprise, because that news came first and came before some of the other firings.
Yeah.
And so that's not the first name.
Yeah. That's not the first name off the, tip of your tongue. That's like, oh yeah, that's a guy that needs to go. Like, if he would have been on the if there was a short list of people to stay, he would have been on my short list of people you would expect to stay. You know what I mean?
Yes. Because he's a young coach. He's not attached at the hip to any one scheme. He's obviously coached in a 4-3. He's coached in a 3-4. He played, at the highest level in the NFL, former Trojan, pretty good recruiter. I think the big thing here with Kenichi Odizi being let go is his relationship with Clancy Pendergast. We had reported a bit about there being a little bit of issue between he and Clancy when it came to being on the field during games. And Clancy wanted him in the press box. And we saw him actually on the field for a few games this season for the first time. And then at the end of the season, he ended up back in the press box. And so they had a bit of a contentious relationship behind the scenes, from what I gather. And I think that ultimately led to him being fired, because Clancy Pendergast obviously is being retained. And so it was one of those things that early in the day you kind of wondered, all right, is the whole defensive staff being fired?
Right.
Is it just him? We really didn't know how things were going to unravel throughout the day. So that was a bit of a surprise early on.
Yeah. So if KU was gone, then you're like, wow, like everybody's going to be gone. It obviously that didn't come to be, but that was a little bit of a surprise to me. The next one, not as big of a surprise. Defensive back coach Ronnie Bradford was also let go.
And I think that's where people started to really assume, okay, they're letting everybody go. Because while Kenichi Odizie had maybe a contentious relationship with Clancy Pendergast, Ronnie Bradford was brought in by Clancy Pendergast to be defensive backs coach. And so you started to wonder, and I think a lot of people were just connecting dots saying, okay, if Clay Helton's going to fire Ronnie Bradford, then he's probably going to have to fire Clancy Pendergast. We really wondered that dynamic, if Clay could fire Ronnie Bradford and not fire Clancy. Obviously, we have that answer now. But I think at that point during the day, a lot of people are jumping to conclusions and saying, all right, he's gone, so Clancy has to be gone as well. And certainly with Ronnie Bradford, we've seen a mixed bag in terms of defensive back play on the field. But we've seen time and time again a lot of drop balls in the recruiting process. You know, last year there was a lot of incidents where USC really lucked out. I mean, it was the skin of their teeth that they were able to sign a really good defensive back class. It could have gone south if it not been, I think, for the efforts of Gavin Morris and Eric Ziskin and some of the support staff. They really supplemented Ronnie Bradford as a recruiter. He was one of those part-time recruiters that just decided it wasn't important until the very end and when you had to go on in-home visits. He had not talked to Chris Steele at the point of when Chris Steele decommitted from USC to the point that he had his in-home visit last week. That's really unacceptable. You can't do that at the college level. You have to be involved. You have to go out, and you've got to shop for the groceries. It's kind of the old Bill Parcells saying of, you know, when he wanted to be GM and have those kind of managerial controls over team operations and the draft. It's like, you know, you want me to cook the dinner, but you don't want me to go out and shop for the groceries. As a college coach, you have to do both. You have to go shop for the groceries, and you have to be able to coach those players up on the field and develop them. And I think Bradford was just really too laissez-faire when it came to the recruiting process and allowed a lot of other people to evaluate and recruit for him. And then he basically came in at the end of the year and sat down, you know, in home and just talk to the parents and talk to the kids. And the thing, and we have to say this, I've never heard anything about him from a locker room standpoint that the players didn't like him. I hear the opposite. I hear the players actually liked him. They thought he was a good coach, and personality wise, they actually liked him. So it wasn't one of those things where he was disliked by the players on the team, and that sort of was something that was causing an issue on the recruiting trail. It was just, I think he did not like recruiting. I think he looked at himself as an NFL quote-unquote type guy because he had played in the NFL. He had a cup of coffee in the NFL under Clancy Pendergast. But at that point, he, I think, went to Cal and was something like a grad assistant and then ended up at Louisiana Tech. You know, then you got to kind of take stock and say, okay, maybe I'm not an NFL guy. Maybe college is where I'm going to, you know, make my comeback, and I've got to be a good recruiter. I've got to be a guy that's aggressive on the recruiting trail. And you see that with most colleges, the defensive back coach is one of their best recruiters. And for USC, it was the opposite of that. And so it was something that we saw coming, probably should have been last year. I think the way things went and there were some mistakes made just in recruiting that I think, quite frankly, probably could have got him fired. But Clay Helton stuck with him. And, you know, this time around, he ended up not being retained.
Yeah, I guess one of the issues with the staff, the way it was constructed, is you had some kind of part-time recruiters, right? I guess that's a good way to describe it. And Ronnie Bradford was one of those guys. And, you know, not to say good coach, bad coach or whatever, but I think when you're trying to put together a college staff, like having that many guys that don't really care for recruiting or part-time recruiters, it's just not the way it works now, especially with the early signing period. So I guess that's why I wasn't too surprised with that one, Gerard.
It certainly doesn't work when you're 5-7. And that's the thing. If you are coaching up your players to the point that, you know, they're winning games and the team is winning, and then, you know, the team can kind of help recruit and you can kind of stand on what you've done on the field and the guys that you've developed. But you're not doing that when you're losing those games. And it sort of came to a head this year. I mean, it was one of those things that we saw the last two recruiting cycles where there were multiple issues and multiple instances where you could say, wow, USC is dropping the ball here in defensive backs. But they won at the end of the year. And that sort of glossed over a lot of the mistakes and a lot of issues that were going on that you could see behind the scenes and a lot of very close calls. You know, you go to Rose Bowl and a lot of those wrongs are righted just because of the momentum that you're building on the field. And the same thing really at the end of last year because they were going to the Cotton Bowl. But we knew there was some things going on, and there's instances and specific stories that I even have that you just shake your head and go, wow, what the heck is going on here, man? I mean, you got to get on the ball here. You got to go after these kids. The thought that USC recruits itself, it only goes so far. And so definitely the defensive back position was handicapped a bit, I think, on the recruiting trail. And we have to remember that, you know, Clay Helton made that decision this past offseason that he didn't want to bring in that 10th, that ninth assistant coach, I should say, at defensive back coach. We thought that it was going to be Dante Williams, and that would be a guy that would kind of help supplement the defensive back recruiting, and maybe Ronnie Bradford wouldn't have to be so involved with recruiting, but they decided to give Kerry Colbert that full-time job. And so obviously more emphasis is on Ron Bradford to go out there and recruit. And you have to say that Clancy Pendergast himself is not real involved in the recruiting process either. I think during May evaluations, I was told by a team source that he had made like 7 visits as opposed to, you know, the 2022 visits that T. Martin had made during the May evaluation period. You know, he's not very involved. But at the same time, I will say this, coordinators, you don't necessarily expect to be very involved. They've got more on their plate. And when you're a defensive coordinator, you're not necessarily going to be that guy that's going to be relentless on the recruiting trail, relentless on the Twitter timeline, emailing kids, sending them, you know, photo edits. That's not really what your coordinators are going to be doing. That's not necessarily what you want your coordinators to be doing. You want your coordinators to be in the film room scheming and making sure that you've got a sound football team from a playbook standpoint, not necessarily from, I'm going to go out there and be this dynamic recruiter and blow off the X's and O's. So from that standpoint, I think Clancy Pendergast can get away with it more. Certainly with his resume, he can get away with it more. But when you're just an assistant coach and you're a position coach, if you're not just amazing coaching your guys up to be supermen on the field, you better be a pretty damn good recruiter.
Yes, you better be. So let's talk about the next coach. So this was actually happened about a month ago, Neil Callaway. He wasn't in this initial purge, but he's gone as well. And that kind of opens up some interesting opportunities with Tim Drevno being on the staff and all that. So maybe talk about Neil Callaway a little bit, Gerard.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because we've already seen sort of the fruits of that firing to some extent. And certainly don't want to be disrespectful to Coach Callaway. He put in some effort, obviously, with USC, but I think you could kind of label him as another part-time recruiter, a guy that, you know, wasn't really putting a lot of emphasis on recruiting early in the process and during the summer and during the season, really kind of pushing everything back until November. And we saw that with several players. And when he was fired and Tim Drevno stepped into that role, you could see immediately that he was just much more aggressive in contacting kids. There were kids that had never talked to Neil Callaway that Tim Drevno locally was reaching out to and trying to gain some traction with. And so just from the standpoint of being visible on the recruiting trail, and we have to say, this is the time of year also that USC just gets more involved with recruiting in general. So, you know, it's a little bit of a happenstance there. But I think regardless, even if this happened, you know, earlier in the year, or perhaps it was that move was made when it should have been made probably last year. I mean, I think we kind of talked about it when Tim Drevno was hired. This reminded us a lot of Mike Summers being hired when you had James Craig as the offensive line coach when Lane Kiffin was there. It's like you bring in Mike Summers to tutor or mentor James Craig as an offensive line coach, and you only have so many positions that you can hire on a team. You know, you don't have unlimited spots as full-time coaches, and so those are precious spots that you have to fill, and you're going to have two offensive line coaches. Kind of sort of got the vibe. This is what Clay Helton was doing it without overtly doing it. Yeah. This was sort of, you know, we're going to bring in Drevno and he's going to have one eye on the running backs and then he's going to have one eye on the offensive line and kind of supervise what Neil Callaway is doing and maybe what he's not doing. And you know, at that point you say, look, you just need to make the move. If you feel that inclination, Neil Calloway probably should have been fired last season, which is what a lot of people felt. And just make Drev know your offensive line coach. That was probably the move from the beginning. You should have just went with that. So that's kind of how it's shaken out. And now we see Tim Drev know more in light of an offensive line coach. And as a recruiter, yeah, he's definitely been much more active. I mean, I think just the most obvious thing is Jonah Tana'u, who the four-star Harbor City Narbonne offensive tackle, who, you know, one of the top offensive tackles in the West, one of the top offensive tackles on USC's board, committed to Oregon, but he's already been to USC more times in the last month than he'd been at USC all season long. So that tells you something. That shows you, okay, There's some more aggressiveness there. There's more contact there. We've seen that from some offensive linemen just in general. Like I said, there's guys that USC just seem to not really even be talking to recruiting in a year where you need offensive linemen. You need to get 5-6 guys. And so I think that, you know, that's a move in the right direction with Tim Drevenel. I think Tim Drevenel is a lot more specific in what he wants. I think he's more specific in his evaluations. I remember talking to him the first time he was hired by Sark to be a USC offensive line coach, and talked to him about what he looks for in offensive linemen. And he's very specific. He talked about blue feet, was a term I've never heard before, but he talked about blue feet, basically saying, you know, quick feet, agile, good balance. He's looking for a certain type of player, certain type of build. And he was very specific. He was very detail-oriented in what he's looking for. Whereas Calloway kind of asked him the same question. And like with Bob Connolly, when I asked him that question, I got a lot of football talk. I got a lot of generalities. I got a lot of, well, you know, we're looking for tough guys. We're looking for good football players. We're looking for guys that want to be part of USC. Well, that's fine. But you got to have a profile. You got to have a specific thing you're looking for, because that's the type of blocking that you're going to ask those guys to do. You want to have a specific type of approach on the offensive line, how you're going to block the defense, and that is in turn going to be in sync in your whole offensive scheme. So you do have to be specific. Do you want faster, more athletic offensive linemen? Do you want guys that are just bigger, more road grading type offensive linemen? It's going to go along with the type of offense that you're running. So I think it's good when you have an offensive line coach that is a bit more of a technician and a bit more specific and focused in what he wants.
We got to move on to T. Martin, because that's a big one. There was a demotion or a removal of duties. He was not going to continue to call plays after the Arizona State game. Incidentally, USC went 1-3 after that. But, you know, whatever. I wanted to get your thoughts on T. Martin. And this was another one that was a little shocking to me, because we definitely had some intel from sources that were saying he would stick around. He likes being in Los Angeles, and he didn't need to be the offensive coordinator or play caller or anything like that. Maybe some other title. He's the best recruiter you got. Develops wide receivers well, putting guys in the NFL. It seemed like if Clay Helton could keep him, that was one thing he would do. And obviously that did not happen.
This was the interesting move that we talked about. You know, this was the one where you just didn't know how this would shake out and really what the impact would be on the future staff. I think that was the most important thing, because obviously if you've got T. Martin there as an offensive coordinator, you can't bring in another offensive coordinator. So he would have to not only take the demotion from being a play caller, which we heard from several very good sources close to T. Martin, that he asked for that. He didn't want to call plays anymore. He wanted to take a step back from that. Clay Helton had been involved with play calling throughout the season, and perhaps there was some frustration because, you know, Clay is trying to be involved and then T is trying to call plays and things are not going well. And maybe T. Martin just decided, you know what, I'm going to wipe my hands of this. I'm going to back off and I'm going to let Clay Helton publicly go ahead and take the responsibility and the accountability for the offense. And so he took a step back from that. But like you said, we'd heard that he loves L.A. His family loves L.A. He really wants to stay here. And there was potential that he may just take an associate head coach or an assistant head coaching title and remain on the staff as that, and then obviously as a wide receiver coach. Now, we don't know what happened there. We don't know if perhaps he's making probably about $1.2 million a year. Maybe USC came to him and said, let's let's renegotiate that contract because now you're no longer going to be offensive coordinator, and he took offense to that. That's complete speculation and conjecture on my part, but that's just what you're thinking, knowing that he wanted to stay in LA and that he was open, at least from what we were hearing from him, to being still on the staff and not necessarily being married to that offensive coordinator title. So he's gone. So obviously that opens up the offensive coordinator spot completely. So USC moves forward from there. The one thing that's interesting with T. Martin, though, leaving, is that you still have Tim Drevno there. And Tim Drevno is the run game coordinator. Now, what I was just talking about with Tim Drevno and why I like him, against, I guess, as an Italian evaluator, just in terms of recruiting, is because he's very specific and detail-oriented in what he's looking for in offensive linemen. And I think that goes a long way in development because you really have a vision of what you want. Now, if you're bringing in a guy like, let's say, Cliff Kingsbury, because we've heard a lot about that, and that sort of opens that Pandora's box in the discussion, Tim Drevno being the run coordinator and offensive line coach, that's a very different type of offensive line blocking and scheme when you're talking about an air raid offense. And Tim Drevno's never been a part of an air raid offense. You know, Stanford, 49ers, Michigan, USC with Sark. None of those teams were necessarily air raid or had those type of splits or used that type of run scheme. So that makes it a little interesting because you still have Tim Drevno there who, I mean, he came in as a run game coordinator. I'm sure he's getting paid as a run game coordinator. You retain him, but you're still bringing an offensive coordinator in on top of him. How is that relationship? How do they work together? And is Tim Drevno able to adjust to a totally different scheme if you bring in somebody like Cliff Kingsbury?
Right. And then you don't know if you bring in a big name like that. And just coincidentally, so Gil Brandt, you know, he's a former VP of player personnel for the Cowboys. He's an analyst for NFL.com, and he's a radio host and stuff. So he's been around a while. He tweeted out, like maybe within a half hour or so, the phone of former Texas Tech coach Cliff Kingsbury has been ringing off the hook from NFL teams, including two that have given him firm offers. College offense has infiltrated the NFL, and Kingsbury's superb knowledge of it is in high demand. He also said, the college phone seemed to be working as well, was told by a college head coach that USC is now the clear front runner for Kingsbury. As these things tend to go, stay tuned. But for now, USC is in the driver's seat with the offensive coordinator opening. So we also had Matt Leinart tweet out something that was like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something positive, like, I can't believe it, or something like, oh, no, let's go. He tweeted, let's go. And people are like, huh, what does that mean?
Well, we talked about this Monday, I believe it was, that we had some pretty good intel. That intel has stood the test of the last 3 days. We were told that there was definitely some smoke there between Kingsbury and USC. We reported specifically, because there was a lot of talk about him being on campus, our sources said that was not happening, that he wasn't on campus at all. And truthfully, you would think if there was a meeting between he and Clay Helton, it probably wouldn't happen on campus. And why I thought that there was smoke there is because there was such a coy attitude about the word interview. Because they're denying that he's on campus, but my sources are saying there might be some talk there. And I go, well, wait a second. What is the difference between talk and an interview? And there was a report, I think there was a Twitter report, and I can't remember who it was, so I won't say who it was because I don't want to misattribute. But somebody had said that, you know, he had not interviewed with USC. And I thought that was very interesting because that's sort of almost agent talk. Like, you know, he hasn't talked specifically with this team or something. And then, you know, well, the agents are talking to the teams and, you know, that how that goes. Well, I was told that with Cliff Kingsbury, there probably wouldn't be an interview. And this kind of goes to something that you had heard about a month ago about Clay Helton and interviewing assistants. I was told that Cliff Kingsbury probably wouldn't get a formal interview. While he did meet with Clay Helton, we reported that as well. The interview thing was kind of sort of where people were getting, they were being slippery about it. And somebody had said, you know, as a source said, you know, a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who's basically been a head coach and got head coach pedigree is not going to sit down and have the kind of, you know, formal interview that you would have for a position coach. It's not going to go down like that. So I kind of felt that people were sort of using the semantics of, you know, him being interviewed or him being on campus and this not being true to kind of make it sound like, well, there was nothing going on there when in fact there was something going on there. So there definitely has been contact between he and Clay Helton from what I'm told. And there was a meeting, but I'm gathering that meeting probably happened off campus. And that would make probably the most sense anyways,
yeah.
Just because, you know, the campus would be kind of a circus. So yeah, there's definitely some stuff going on there and, you know, you have to be careful because I'm always the first person to try to keep expectations on an even keel. Cause you know how the message boards can be and people kind of grab onto information, but we kind of came out pretty aggressively and said, yeah, you know what, there's really something here going on. And I still believe that there's something going on and that there is a chance that Cliff Kingsbury ends up being USC's offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I tried to get, just on a side note, I tried to get Liner to spill something, but he wouldn't. He said, you know, it sounds like it's about
what is Leinart's, what would Leinart's possible relationship be with Kingsbury? Does he know Kingsbury? Would he have some type of information from an agent standpoint? Do they share agents? That's how that kind of information ends up sort of leaking out.
Yeah. He, I just texted him and it was like nothing to report, but, yeah, I just thought maybe he'd spill something like, yeah, he's in or something, but whatever. We could just talk about
it. Well, the peristyle sleuths have to get on that. Leinart Kingsbury, what's the relationship there? Is there a relationship there? Is it a complete red herring? You guys tell us on the peristyle.
Let us know. But that would be, I mean, just taking a step back from this, Gerard, from what we've seen, USC, there's more coaching stuff we want to talk about, but I just want to take a step back for a second. What we've seen, five coaches. I guess we didn't talk about Brian Ellis, the quarterback coach. He's taking the offensive coordinator job at Western Kentucky, where Tyson Helton, who was a one-year offensive coordinator for Tennessee, is moving on. He was probably going to be fired there because they didn't do very well. But he's moving on, and he's going to be the Western Kentucky head coach. So congratulations to him, former USC quarterback coach. And Brian Ellis is leaving to go join him. So there'll be five positions open. But looking at what USC needed to do when Lynn Swann came out and said, you got to change the culture and discipline and personnel and staff and all that kind of stuff. This isn't that big of a move, I guess you could say. Like when you compare it to what Notre Dame did, both coordinators gone, strength and conditioning coach gone. In this case, it's one coordinator gone and you still have your special teams coordinator. You still have your defensive coordinator. You still have your strength and conditioning coach as of at least right now. So to me, it's not like this isn't that big, a big enough move to make an impact. But if you do bring in a huge name like a Cliff Kingsbury and he runs his own system and not tries to do whatever USC's doing, then I would start to buy in a little bit more because that's a big hire. But still, I don't think it's enough turnover when you're trying to change the culture of this program to do that. But I guess it's a side thing. But get your thoughts on that, Gerard.
Well, going back to Kingsbury, the other thing that I'd heard is that, you know, he'd only take the job if he had anonymity and he could just run his own offense.
Okay.
So this is not – I don't believe this is – Cliff Kingsbury coming in to run the USC offense and he has some influence on what the offense is now. I think in order for it to happen, Clay Helton has to take a big step back and say, all right, we're going to do this now from the ground up. We're going to run more of an air raid offense. Now, obviously with the personnel at his disposal, it's a little different than Texas Tech. Maybe Cliff Kingsbury wants to do some different things. We've seen Chip Kelly, you know, with his time in the NFL, he comes from Oregon, he goes to the NFL, he comes to UCLA. He's got a little different scheme and probably a little different philosophy than he had when he was just at Oregon because he's got different personnel to work with. So we don't know that Cliff Kingsbury is coming in to run the Texas Tech offense at USC. We just know that he's coming in, or he would come in, and I think he's going to basically have total control over what he wants to do and how he wants to do it, which being something that, you know, coming from an air raid offense and that being his, you know, really where he's built all his success, that's what USC would end up doing. It would be more four wide receivers. You would see less traditional tight end in line. You would see more, I mean, Y split out. It would be interesting just, you know, from a personnel standpoint. A lot of USC traditionalists, a lot of alums would hate it because a lot feel like, you know, USC is at their best when they're running a pro-style offense. And we saw that when, you know, Pete Carroll left and Lane Kiffin was brought in, and then even Steve Sarkisian. You heard that time and time again about running the pro-style offense and utilizing the talent that's there to have a pro-style quarterback. I will say this, with Cliff Kingsbury, I think that benefits JT Daniels and his style of quarterbacking probably more than it does maybe Sam Darnold. I think JT, although he did improve his athleticism from his sophomore year to his junior year, watching him at USC is clearly not mobile enough to be a guy that you're going to run design with the spread option. And I think, you know, I'd like to see USC have run that more, even with how he is athletically. I mean, I think they could have gotten probably 6-7 yards out of him in a lot more games if he would have just read the end and actually kept the ball and been a little more part of the running game. But I think by design, USC was just very conservative, and they didn't want him running, and they didn't want him getting hurt. And so, you know, you didn't see him kind of do the sort of gunslinging cowboy Sam Darnold, I'm just going to go make a play. You know, being a freshman, obviously, I think he tried to play more within the system than Sam Darnold did, and it hurt the offense, because I think it's playbook-wise, the biggest criticism I always had of the gumbo offense, as they used to call it, between T. Martin and Clay Helton, which is really just sort of a mix between what Sark was doing with No Huddle and then a lot of Lane Kiffin's offense, it really restricted the players from having to play within the playbook, and you didn't see a real move with the offense until you had a guy like Sam Darnold who played outside of the playbook. And that was really why I said Sam Darnold needed to be the starter, because when you had Max Brown in there, you saw the quarterback playing within the system. The system just wasn't very good. The system just wasn't good enough to have a quarterback that just sat there and did exactly what was written up in the playbook. It didn't become better until you had Sam Darnold sort of break outside the playbook and start to make plays on his own running the ball. And that's true, though, of a lot of college offenses. Nowadays, because you have a 20-hour rule, if you have a quarterback there that can play outside the playbook, you can't prepare for that as a defense. You just don't know when that guy's going to take off and run. And with the spread option, you obviously have to have your defense on the field be able to make that play, to make that read, to make that decision. You can coach and prepare for it, but your guy is going to be there, and at the end of the day, he's going to have to make that play. Okay, am I taking the quarterback, or am I taking the running back? And so that's where RPO comes in. It's sort of that just that variable that you can't totally prepare for as a defense, and Sam Darnold was able to execute on that even when it wasn't a part of the offense. And so when you bring in JT Daniels, you're restricted more to, okay, we got to play within the playbook, and we've got to use more of a traditional pocket quarterback in order to move the football. And I think with an air raid offense, and you're going to see, I think, that benefit more JT Daniels and those type of quarterbacks than just a straight running type of quarterback. So we'll see. I mean, if that's the move that they make and Cliff Kingsbury is the offensive coordinator, certainly you're going to see USC pass the ball a lot more. It's just going to be interesting to see if it's, you know, if it's developed or sort of morphs into something a little different, because now he has at disposal better offensive linemen and more playmaking receivers and some pretty good running backs. You know, I mean, Marquise Stepp steps up, no pun intended, a guy that we didn't really see for most of the year, and boom, you put him in there, and all of a sudden he looks like a legitimate power back. You still have some talent there. We'll see if Stephen Carr is ready to come back from these injuries and become the Stephen Carr we saw his freshman year. You don't have those type of guys coming through the hallways at Texas Tech, and so that may expand, that may change what a guy would come in, you know, a Mike Leach, a Cliff Kingsbury. They may decide, you know what, I'm going to kind of augment this offense a little more so I can play more towards my personnel.
One of the other aspects that could impact everything is coaches that were retained. Like, you know, I kind of talked about this was, I thought there'd be more changes and stuff. What do you feel about Clancy Pendergast returning, and what is that? How does that impact recruiting?
You know, it's interesting. We talked about him as a recruiter already. I think just schematically, you know, you kind of have to look at USC and try to understand, I guess, what the move was there. USC's been solid, I think, mostly on defense. I think you would say the majority of games that they've played with Clancy Pendergast, the defense has been pretty solid. It's kind of been feast or famine, though, in a couple games every season. It seems like there's about two games a year where USC just comes out defensively and they are out of sorts. They do not have the right scheme. Their players are missing tackles. They just look like they're playing in quicksand, and you just wonder what happened. What's going on here? You know, USC in the first half against Arizona State, USC trying to stop the run game against UCLA. That's why a lot of people were critical of Clancy Pendergast, because they've had some of those games where they've gotten blown out and the defense has not helped them. Now, in other games, you could blame things on the defense, but then you realize the offense itself has put the defense in bad situations. And so, you know, there's a little bit of that that goes on that you have to sort of take into account and understand that if you're given a short field for half the game, or maybe the special teams have been really bad, like against Texas, where you're punting the ball 4 yards every time. You know, those things obviously affect the defense, and the points on the board are not necessarily relaying how the defense actually played in the game. And so, you know, there was some surprise, because you thought maybe that might just wash the defense, you know, altogether and just have a new staff. But really, when you kind of think about how Clay Helton had to try to get Clancy Pendergast to come back to USC, you kind of understand why he would retain him. I mean, he really had to convince Clancy Pendergast to come back to USC. He's a million-dollar coordinator, just like T. Martin. He's making a lot of money. USC would have to swallow those contracts with not just Martin, but Clancy Pendergast. And then you kind of have to look and see, who are you going to get? You know, the grass is always greener on the other side, but what guy with that kind of resume are you going to be able to lure in? You know, that's a big question. There's crickets on the end of that question.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, you kind of see it and you say, you know what, of the coaches that Clay Helton has gone on and actually hired, Clancy Pendergast probably has the best resume. He's probably the most experienced and the most qualified guy at his spot. You know, you could argue maybe Dylan McCullough was very qualified. Obviously, not with the staff anymore. Tim Drevno is pretty qualified. But Clancy, you know, that's a guy that brought the Arizona Cardinals to the Super Bowl. So you don't have too many guys like that on your staff. And I think to get away from that, you would have had to have an option that would have been a very good option sitting out there that you felt comfortable that you could you felt confident that you could bring in right away.
Yeah, that's – I mean – with the offensive side, if you feel like a guy like Kingsbury is there, cool. If not, then, you know, if you don't feel out on the defensive side, maybe that's why. But I guess we should probably go by one and just kind of talk about what each guy, their impact on recruiting is. You know, we probably touched on it, you know, already, but maybe we'll just start with Kenichi and kind of give us your thoughts on what his impact on recruiting is.
That's a tough one because he was on the road recruiting, like many of these coaches. He just saw Drake Jackson, the 260-pound defensive end, four-star from Corona Centennial, was just in home with him, I believe it was Sunday night. And USC was in a very, very good position for Drake Jackson. And a lot of that had to do with Kenichi Odizi and his relationship with Kenichi Odizi. And so, you know, again, younger coach, he can relate well. He was a pretty solid recruiter. Wasn't, you know, kind of like Ed Orgeron type of guy that sort of, you know, kind of went outside the boundaries of his own position. But I think as a defensive line recruiter, he was doing very well. And now USC's kind of just out there. And a guy like Drake Jackson, who, you know, he's going to take his official visit to USC last. He's not going to be an early signing. That's big and significant. But USC has to make a pretty big hiring here. I mean, you got to get a guy that can recruit first and foremost. And so you kind of look at the college game. And this is, again, this is where it's interesting because you're retaining Clancy Pendergast. And obviously Clancy is going to have some say over who they bring in. Now, does Clancy interview who he's going to bring in? Does he basically take the reins and say, okay, I'm going to go find some guys? Because he brought in Bradford. And obviously it was because of his relationship with the Kansas City Chiefs. But that turned out to be bad. That didn't work. And so I don't know, if you can trust Clancy with that. You know, you have to go and get a guy. You cannot have a defensive line coach that has the attitude of, you know, what Ronnie Bradford had with recruiting, and then bring in a defensive back coach with that attitude again. I mean, you'd be even more handicapped. So, you know, we're going to see what happens with Drake Jackson. USC had a good lead there, and this definitely shakes things up, and it puts Arizona State, it puts a few other schools in play that I don't think were really seriously in play. Kenesho Deasy was also going out and actually was on his way to see Ty Robinson when I think he was fired. He was actually in Arizona. And Ty Robinson, you know, it's kind of more or less looked like he was a silent verbal to USC, mainly because of Kenesho Deasy. He raved about his relationship with Kenesho Deasy and talking with him when he took his official visit to USC a few weeks ago. And a lot of people felt like, okay, USC's now the team to beat, where everybody kind of thought he was just going to go to Nebraska. So that's a big one. Now, USC didn't waste any time on that front. Clay Helton was already going out to see Kedon Slovis, the quarterback commit from Scottsdale, Arizona, and he's going to be an early enrollee and early signee, so Clay Helton's going out there to see him. He didn't waste any time. He went and saw Ty Robinson as well. So it was a little interesting because usually the head coach waits a little bit, you know, kind of we get into the mid-December and before you're going to go see early enrollees. And if they're not enrollees that are going to be graduating in January, usually the head coach waits until later January to make that visit. You know, they kind of, that's the last couple of weeks and you sort of start to see the head coaches coming in because they only get that one visit, that one in-home visit. But USC did not waste any time and they swooped in and they visited with Ty Robinson right away. And that goes to show you they feel like that was going to be impactful. That was going to be an issue, firing Kenesho Deasy and maybe losing where they were with Ty Robinson. So very interesting. We're going to see how that shakes out again. In that conversation, Blair Angulo had put up because he had that in-home visit with USC, I believe it was last night, and Ty Robinson had said something to the effect that, you know, Clay Helton has an idea of who he'd like to bring in. So, again, that's interesting that he has an idea. You know, is Clancy Pendergast, you know, what is his ideas? Are they both on the same page with that? Obviously, they have to be on the same page, but is it more Clancy that's making that decision of who to hire, or is it more Clay? Because you would see where Clay would say, okay, we need somebody who's going to be a dynamic recruiter. And where Clancy would say, well, you know, I want a guy who's a good coach. I want a guy that I can trust. I want a guy maybe that I have a relationship with already. So it's going to be interesting. You know, I mean, you kind of have to look and see what other guys that Clancy Pendergast knows or has coached throughout the years and maybe he can bring in. But it's got to be a guy that I think respects and feels that there's really an appreciation for the recruiting process and how important it is to making sure that you can field good defenses because they've got some good defensive linemen there and they have, you know, like I said, they're in line for some pretty good defensive linemen in this class. You want to be able to close. You know, we don't have any real names, obviously. One guy that his name comes up all the time is Tosh Lapoy. And I know people understand that Clancy Pendergast and Tosh Lapoy do have a relationship because they both coached at Cal. But Tosh Lapoy right now is a cool coordinator at Alabama. You would have to pay him a lot of money. And on top of that, I just don't see Clancy Pendergast deciding he's going to be a co-coordinator with a guy that he coached with, you know, so many years ago. Obviously, from a recruiting standpoint, that would be a mega hire by USC. I mean, that would close the deal, I think, with just about everybody on the board, including Siaki Ika, who USC was scheduled to go see Thursday with Kenesho Deasy. I think that may not happen now. I'm not sure. I know that Siaki is also a early signee, so the potential that maybe USC does drop in on him Thursday, you know, we're kind of not sure about that yet. We haven't heard for sure either way, but that's going to be one of those things that, you know, it's going to depend on who they hire, and then at that point we kind of see what's going on and at a crucial sort of position where USC has to continue to get bigger and get stronger and get better because that was definitely an issue for them when they were coming off of sanctions with Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian. They just didn't have the defensive linemen to be able to play against the big boys.
The staying on the defensive side of the ball with Ronnie Bradford, what kind of impact is that going to have? Because there's big name defensive backs out there like, you know, Chris Steele and stuff. What kind of impact is that going to have?
finding a replacement early, because Chris Steele specifically is going to be an early enrollee and he's going to be an early signee, is important. But the impact from a negative standpoint, losing him, is minimal. Gavin Morris is the lead recruiter for Chris Steele. Bradford and Clancy Pendergast both did in-home visit with Chris Steele Sunday, I believe it was, or maybe it was Monday. And they were in there with Gavin Morris. But I think Bradford, it just had not much contact with a lot of the guys that USC was involved with. Noah Pola-Gates, that's more Eric Ziskin's guy. I mean, you can see where you've got support staff guys that are the lead recruiters on defensive backs. You know that the defensive back coach is not necessarily, you know, really involved in their recruitment. So from that standpoint, it's minimal. It's not like Odizzi that had personal relationships with defensive linemen, and those defensive linemen always mention his name. You know, that's always when you know that there's a relationship really growing there and there's a connection there, when the kids talk about those coaches in a personal way. And you just very rarely got that with Ronnie Bradford. It was funny because one of the only guys that I can remember really having a personal relationship with Ronnie Bradford was Jalen Johnson. Jalen Johnson was the cornerback out of Fresno. He's Johnny Johnson's little brother. And he was one of the few guys that really talked about Ronnie Bradford. And I thought, wow, okay, that's interesting. I mean, that's, you know, it was, I think, the first year Ronnie Bradford was there and recruiting. And somewhere along the line, you know, Jalen Johnson decided, you know what, I'm going to go to Utah. And it later came out that, you know, he had the shoulder injury, and we weren't really sure if USC kind of backed off of Jalen Johnson because of that shoulder injury, because Johnny Johnson, who had ended up at UCLA, really his whole career was plagued with a shoulder injury. So you could see where to go, okay, well, that's running in the family. Jalen Johnson has been a great player for Utah, a true freshman starter, a guy that's been very impactful for Utah. But yeah, that was one of the few guys, and he ended up going to Utah. So yeah, from a negative standpoint, this is very minimal. USC is going to continue basically to recruit how they've been recruiting. If they can get somebody who is a good recruiter at that spot, and this is, again, we've talked about this in the podcast several times, and I've talked about it in war rooms and on the peristyle, it's not a deep year for defensive backs. This is not a year where you're going to have a bunch of guys and it's going to be this great defensive back class. Certainly not anywhere near like it was last year. Last year was the year you want to stock up on defensive backs. This year, you're trying to sort of almost break even with the five guys that you've lost off the roster to transfers and legal issues. So you're trying to get a Chris Steele. You're trying to get a Noah Pola-Gates. You're trying to get a Cameron Williams, who's committed to Washington still. You're trying to, you know, make some moves on some guys that are three-star, four-stars, but it's not going to be this amazing class. USC has an opportunity to still cash in on their plan A, basically. Trent McDuffie, Cameron Williams, Chris Steele, maybe a Noah Pola-Gates. You could throw a couple other names out there. If they hire a guy that's a good recruiter. Now, you have several guys in the Pac-12. Well, we've heard Gerald Alexander up at Cal. We've heard Dante Williams up at Oregon. There's some guys out there that they could hire, and that would immediately positively impact the defensive back recruiting position. In fact, I think it would solidify some things with some guys right away. And so this is going to be interesting. This could be an immediate sort of boom reaction. Very good, because USC is adding more than they are, you know, subtracting and then trying to add. This is just an addition at this point. If you bring in a guy that can recruit, that can actually help close the deal. Because like I said, it's really been, you know, Gavin Morris and Eric Ziskin that have sort of supplement the position, and they're handicapped because, you know, Eric Ziskin is not on the road recruiting. He's only really a support staff guy, so there's a lot of restrictions to how they recruit. And Gavin was just put on the road because of Neil Calloway being fired. It opened up a full-time spot, and they're able to put him on the road. So he's out there, you know, actually going in on in-home to visit. So it's great to have him out there. But again, these guys are not defensive back coaches. And at the end of the day, these kids want to know, who am I being coached up by? So that's going to be crucial. But USC, it could be all positive, and really they could gain just a bunch of traction if they do hire a guy that's actually a good recruiter and relates well, and at the same time has an existing relationship with some of these defensive backs on the West Coast.
The biggest impact, I think, because it's obviously USC's most dynamic recruiter, is going to be losing T. Martin, offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach. Was he passing game something? I don't know if the other titles, but as far as recruiting goes, like you mentioned, in May he took 23 visits or something, and another coach might have taken seven. He was a hard worker out there on the recruiting trail. What kind of impact is that going to have on USC recruiting?
Great recruiter, And he'd become, you know, as a coordinator, he'd sort of lessened his role a bit on recruiting. He wasn't just out there recruiting an area or recruiting whoever. You know, he kind of became more of a receivers coach and more of a specific receivers recruiter. And certainly with this year, there being a very good receiver year, I mean, USC looked like they could potentially stock up and maybe get five wide receivers in this class. Now that obviously comes into question. The first thing that USC has to do is solidify the commitments that they have, specifically from Drake London, who I've said time and time again, I think is very underrated and could end up being the best receiver in the whole class. Make sure you tie him down. Now that is not such a big deal because he's also committed to the basketball team. And we've seen basketball recruit very well. So that helps, obviously. That's, you know, you don't have T. Martin there, but the basketball team is still able to recruit him. And obviously the other coaches that are still there at USC are able to recruit him. So you want to make sure you lock him up. Puka Nacua is another guy I think you want to lock up too. He's shown to be a very good player. You know, it's going to be a little bit of a battle with Utah. His brother plays at Utah. He's going to probably visit Utah.
There and, could be Utah won the South there. Too. So, I mean, it's Utah's got something to sell because they won the South.
Exactly. And so, yeah, there could be a pending battle growing there. He does really love Clay Helton, and he likes his staff, and he loves USC. And I think he likes what USC has to offer from an off-the-field standpoint a lot more than Utah. And so, you know, USC, there's sort of that, USC sells itself. That's working a bit on Puka Nacua. But I think, you know, obviously it's going to be who's the receivers coach. We kind of get the sense that Kerry Colbert maybe just moves into that position. And obviously, if you're having a Cliff Kingsbury, you have to wonder, okay, is there going to be a full-time tight ends coach on the staff? Because you don't really use the tight ends like that. They have usually what they do is they have an inside receivers coach and an outside receivers coach in an air raid offense. So Kerry Colbert would maybe just be the inside receivers coach, or maybe he'd be just the outside receivers coach, and a guy like Cliff Kingsbury would bring in somebody else to be receivers coach. So that's going to impact it somewhat. You know, is Kerry kind of taking over? Kerry's a very good recruiter. He hasn't really been a receivers recruiter, but being that he played at USC, was an All-American, and went on to the NFL, I think he's got a lot to sell there. Remember, T. Martin was a really good recruiter, but he's actually a quarterback in college, so he wasn't a receiver. So I think from a development standpoint, you know, maybe Kerry Colbert's able to sell and relate to the receivers because that being his position that he played, there's just a little more connection there. So there's a possibility there. There are guys that are looking at USC. The other thing that works for them, they're local and they grew up Trojan fans. I think obviously the biggest name on the board is still Brew McCoy. And we talked to Brew McCoy several times before, you know, whether Clay Helton was going to be fired or not. And we've talked to him since. Brew McCoy really liked Clay Helton. And that was always going to be a win for USC with him if they retained Clay Helton. So that's that. T. Martin, he did have a good relationship with, and he likes T. Martin. And certainly that continues to sort of open up the door a bit for maybe a Texas or some of these other programs that are recruiting him. I think if USC just makes a good hire and it's a guy that Brew can sit down with and get excited about the potential of the offense, he's going to be on board. I think I think Clay Helton had to be fired and there just have to be a hiring that, you know, Brew just didn't like the guy personally or something. It really got to be a shakeup, I think, for Brew not to end up at USC. So we're going to see how it goes, and you don't want to put a lock on any of these recruits. I just don't believe in that. But I think USC is still in the driver's seat for Brew McCoy. But it's just going to kind of depend on the offense. And obviously it's going to depend on sitting down with the person that's going to be coaching him at USC as a receiver and what that kind of relationship, what that vibe is like. If it's Kerry Colbert, I think that would actually be okay. I think, Brew and Kerry would be fine. And I'm sure Kerry has talked to Brew and there's so much of a relationship there already. It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody brought in from the outside that, you know, you have to bring in cold to try to convince him to stay committed to USC. From that standpoint, because T has become more limited, you know, as an offensive coordinator and focusing more on just the receivers, there's less damage there. You know, a few years ago before he was an offensive coordinator, it would have been even more impactful because he was just recruiting everybody, basically recruiting everybody in the city, you know, under Steve Sarkisian. So that would have been bigger issue. So I think it's not quite as impactful from a recruiting standpoint immediately as people thought it would be. But we do have to see how it shakes out. Kyle Ford, that's a bit more of a guy that's on the fence, a guy that I could see going to Washington or going somewhere else instead of USC. He liked T. Martin, and maybe this is one of those things that sort of shakes that loose. But I think still Kyle Ford's going to visit USC. He's going to be there probably in January. You know, I'm not sure what his early signing – it sounded like he didn't want to sign early. Again, this is one of those things that, you know, we kind of have to be wary of who we're saying is going to sign early and who's not, because kind of that week leading up to the early signing period, sometimes kids get swept up in all the hype and the pressure, and they just want to get it over with. And guys that weren't necessarily planning to sign early, all of a sudden, yeah, I'm signing early. They tweet it out, you know, like 2 days beforehand. It's like, uh-oh, and everybody's scrambling. So we'll see what happens there. But that's one I could see getting away from USC. But, you know, they don't really need to sign five or six guys at wide receiver in this class. Yes, they will have the room. And that's the other thing to point out with all these moves and how USC has to move quickly to replace these coaches is because they are going to oversign in this class. They're more than likely going to want 26 to probably 27, 28 guys in this class. So that means you have to have some early enrollees so you can count back. So that's another important thing where, you know, in past years when you're making coaching moves, you didn't have an early signing period that you had to worry about. Well, this is really, it's sort of compacted because now you not only have the early signing period, but you actually have to use it in order to oversign. So USC has to be on top of things here and make some moves and be aggressive. I think mainly with defensive back coaching and maybe D-line, it's important because you've got Siaki Ika. That's if you feel like you're going to make a hire that's going to impact his recruitment. USC is already on the outside looking in. They're already on the outside looking in. Alabama is the clear leader for Siaki Ika. So if that's not really you're going to make a splash in his recruitment, then you don't worry about that. You want to make sure you make a good hire and you're able to get Drake Jackson. You're able to make a move on Stephon Wright, who's really leaning to Arizona State now. You want to make sure you close with Ty Robinson. You want to make sure you get Matthew Polamalu. You know, you want to make sure you get the guys that are there that you feel confident that you can get making a solid hire, and you don't necessarily push it and try to make a, you know, a hire early just because you think Siaki Ika is going to end up, you know, kind of coming back to USC when, like I said, I don't know if you're making a hire other than Tosh Lapoy or somebody that's related to him to make an impact there.
The for the quarterback stuff with Brian Ellis leaving, any impact with him being gone?
No. You know, nice guy. I think he, you know, was a solid recruiter and kids liked him. His quarterback class is not good. And Clay Helton is obviously being a quarterback and having coached the position is really a lot of overlap there in terms of recruiting. Who they bring in as an offensive coordinator is going to be a big deal. But I think Kevin Slovis was in regardless of who the coach was going to be at USC. There's several kids like that. Jude Wolf said the same thing. Clay Helton, no Clay Helton, I'm going to USC. So those kids, you know, it's not that big a deal. But obviously, you know, we talked about, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, and we talked about the tight end position. That's something that, you know, those tight ends have to kind of be concerned about to some extent. You know, I mean, Jude Wolf is a very good tight end. Could he play in an air raid type system? It's not that they don't use the tight end at all. There have been some tight ends that they've used in those systems that have been good. They're not the prototypical, you know, NFL tight end. You know, Jude is like probably 6'6", 245 at this point. He's more of a prototypical inline tight end. So maybe there'd be questions with that, you know, with him, and he'd want to get those answered with Clay Helton. Look at, I mean, am I going to school where I'm not even going to be utilized? Granted, it's not like they've utilized the tight end even with the pro-style offense they've been using. So, you know, I don't know if it could get much worse. What was it, 17 receptions, 18 receptions or something this season by the tight ends? They're obviously not utilizing them a whole lot. So, you know, you've changed the offense. It's not like you're necessarily taking a huge step back.
All right. Well, I think that was all I have for the coaching stuff. Anything else you wanted to share with the coaching shakeup and stuff?
No, I think we pretty much addressed everything we can address. Obviously, we don't know, you know, what names are coming forward, and that's still information trickling in as to who may be a candidate for what position. And the reaction from recruits just in general, that's that's not coming until those hires are made. You know, you can't necessarily, it's like, you know, there's a lot of question about, well, what's the reaction from recruits that Clay Helton has been retained? It's the reaction that has been the reaction for the last 3 months. You know, the kids are not, they like Clay Helton. And they told us they like Clay Helton. And they're comfortable with Clay Helton. And they trust Clay Helton. And their parents like Clay Helton. So that's status quo. There's nothing really changing. What is changing are the position coaches and how the dynamic of the coaching staff sort of plays out. And that's obviously going to impact their decisions. And that's going to be interesting. So we're waiting for that. And that really doesn't come until these hires are actually made and some of these coaches make contact with these recruits and that first impression is made.
Well, you want to jump into some questions?
Do we have time?
Where are we at now? Yeah, we got time. Yeah, we went an hour.
Like I said, it could be the hour and a half spotlight for me.
It is.
We
don't have that many questions, so we'll probably do all right. We'll not rapid fire, but we'll just kind of get through them. Okay, so Kevin in North Tustin, this is a great lesson for everyone if you're going to send in a question, because you know we don't do these every week, and we're both getting older, me older than Gerard. You don't remember everything that you've said. And sometimes people will like watch a show that we did 6 months ago and then they'll ask us a question like we just recorded it, which we had not. But his question was, with the season almost over, I'd love to hear Gerard's comments on JT Daniels based on what Greg Biggins said on your season preview podcast back in August. Thanks, Kevin in North Tustin. So, Kevin, if you want to reference something from August, no matter what it is, you probably should give us some more details, not just say, hey, what about what you said back then? Like, I have no idea. I don't know if you remember, Gerard.
I don't remember a podcast with Greg Biggins.
No, I don't either.
Did you do a podcast with him?
No, I didn't. I don't think I did. I don't remember.
Maybe I did. Maybe I talked to Greg and Blair or something. I can't remember.
We do so many shows. I was on the radio so often yesterday. I mean, I couldn't tell you what I said everywhere. It's a lot to remember.
Yeah, let alone what Greg said, right?
Like, right.
What
yeah.
Somebody else said. I mean, I know what Greg felt about JT coming out of high school. I mean, he felt he was really, really smart. He was abnormally smart. That was going to be the reason why he would have the opportunity to be able to start, because he would know the offense and be much more ahead of the curve than your average freshman. We talked a little bit about his athleticism and how that works, and comparing him with Sam Darnold and why Sam Darnold was so successful within USC's offense, and JT Daniels being a bit more of a pocket quarterback, yet, you know, being maybe underrated from an athletic standpoint. You know, how he was going to be able to work the offense and how that would change the offense, I guess, going forward. I don't really know what he said from, if there was a prediction or anything like that, if that's what, I don't know really what the question is referencing, what he said. You know, it's like just in general what he said, or like it was a specific thing that he said and what I think about it now. You know, JT had an okay season. He had a solid season. You know, I don't
his
think
his numbers
it was
were almost the same as Matt Barkley's. Like, they're about the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean,
from his freshman year. Yeah.
And people will point out, well, you know, Matt Barkley played on the road and they remember that game, you know, against Ohio State. But, you know, JT Daniels had to play on the road against Texas. And obviously, they didn't win that game. Like, USC won the game against Ohio State. But he had a tough season that he had to deal with as well, playing on the road against Utah. Matt Barkley didn't have to do that. You know, playing against Stanford, on the road. I mean, there was plenty of games early in the season that were really difficult for a freshman to just jump into. And so I think he held his own. I think he kept the turnovers, you know, to a minimum. Obviously, stylistically, we're looking at him as opposed to a guy that was a first-round pick. You know, Matt Barkley didn't really necessarily have that same sort of transition. I think Matt Barkley, what he was taking over from, was it John David Booty at that point? I can't even remember the line of succession there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, I mean, he wasn't taking over Sam Darnold, who was such a gravitational point for the offense. And so, you know, you put a freshman in there, and obviously people are automatically making those comparisons and what he brings to the offense or what he lacks with the offense as opposed to Sam Darnold. And so I think he played solid. I can't remember, you know, Greg's, or if there was an actual prediction there on how he would play. I think the offense just overall struggled. The offensive line struggled. I mean, you couldn't get your snaps down. Like, that's not Jake Daniels' fault. Like, every game you had snaps that are at his feet or over his head. I mean, they lost the game basically because they had a snap go over his head. There's a lot of stuff that went on during the season where the offense is just sort of inept. And like I said before, I think with JT, because he's a bit more of a pocket quarterback, you are restricted more to the playbook. You're restricted to the design of the playbook. And certainly you're restricted more because he's a freshman, and there's only so many things he can do at the line of scrimmage. There's only so many checks and alerts that he's going to know to give, at least some defenses that he even recognizes. I mean, I'm sure there's defenses he saw this season he's never seen before in his entire life. I know he's a really smart guy, and he can really absorb a lot of stuff, but if you have never seen something before, you've never seen it before. So, yeah, I think he played well this season. I think he was okay. He wasn't amazing, and obviously the other thing that really hurts him is that you got a guy like Tui Tagovailoa over at Alabama. He comes in during the national championship game at halftime, and he wins the national championship. So people are looking at that and going, well, gosh, I mean, look at what Alabama's doing with that guy. It's a different story. It's apples and oranges. I think, you know, JT, for what he was given, the position he was in, the scenario, how it played out, I think he played pretty well. The question is really going to be, how is he able to continue to be a leader and earn that spot? Because there was some rumblings that, you know, maybe getting that spot just right off the bat, and there was a lot of feel, I think, from the coaching staff, like he was going to get the spot even before he got on campus. Maybe that leaked into the locker room a little bit, and there was some feeling like he was entitled to it. I don't know if JT has really a lot of control over that. He just went out there and tried to win the job, but maybe there was something that went on there that wasn't handled properly. They got to get that straight going forward, obviously. You know, the quarterback position, if you bring in a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, perhaps it opens up again. You know, perhaps there's another quarterback. I mean, it will be like that publicly. They will say that publicly. It's not going to be, yeah, I'm coming in, I'm a new offensive coordinator, we're installing a new offense. Oh, yeah, JT Daniels is a starter. That's not going to happen. You know, it's going to be, these guys are all, to me, you know, on an equal playing field, and they're all going to be competing for that starting job. Now, whether they believe that behind the scenes or not, you know, that remains to be seen. But I think, you know, certainly JT this past year, you know, you can only put so much on his shoulders. I think he played well in considering, you know, all things considering.
All right, let's move on to our next one. We got Don. He said, SC's targets slash commits appear to be lacking linemen. 4- and 5-star skill players are nice, but what's up with the lack of line recruits? I know Helton claims he does not use the recruiting services for evaluation. So how is he able to evaluate all the high school players without their services?
Well, I mean, I think what he's saying is it's not necessarily the services. You got to know there's a difference between the recruiting services and recruiting publications. But, you know, 24/7 Sports is a recruiting publication. Rivals is a recruiting publication. We're not a service. We're not there to get kids recruited. There are recruiting services that actually send video and they send information to the colleges, and they help to try to get the kids recruited by the colleges. So it's a little different process. And that, I'm sure USC is in contact with, and they get people that send them, you know, film and send them information on kids and say, hey, this kid really likes you, and this is, you know, you should recruit this kid. And obviously from the camps, they do a bunch of evaluations. They go out on their own during May, and they evaluate specific positions. They've been doing that since really Steve Sarkisian, where the coaching staff evaluates per position. Now that's different than what they used to do with Pete Carroll. And again, this is sort of the thing, like you go, well, what's changing with USC? Well, Clay Helton's not changing these things. These are things that he's always done, and we think that he's going to continue to do. That came from Steve Sarkisian, where they actually recruited by position. And it's different. It's different. And I think the thinking is you want that position coach to develop the relationship with those players and to really be able to pound the table for his position from the beginning of the recruitment to the end of the recruitment. Whereas if you're recruiting by area, you sort of have the first initial wave, which actually usually happens in January when there's a contact period. The coaches will go out there and they'll kind of basically scout their areas, use their connection in those areas. You know, there's a reason why they're given those areas. It's either, you know, maybe if they're an ex-player, they played there, they have buddies there, they're from there. You go there, you have those connections, you sort of weed out and see, you know, if there's some players in that area that are guys that can play for you. You develop that relationship through whatever connections you have, and then you hand off those guys to the position coaches sometime usually around the summer. That's usually how it's been done. That was how it was done with Pete Carroll. That's how it was done with Lane Kiffin. But Steve Sarkisian changed things. So from that standpoint, that's a little different in how they recruit and how they go about things. But I think maybe the point of that is, you know, they don't go by stars. They don't go by reading 24/7 and saying, oh, wow, this guy is, you know, number one in the nation because 24/7 said so. I mean, you can look at Kayvon Thibodeau as a perfect example. USC is really not recruiting Kayvon Thibodeau right now. Why? Because they just don't think he fits their system, and they think he's kind of probably overrated to some extent. I have to imagine that. If they thought he was really a five-star, you know, maybe the second-best player in the nation, they would be recruiting him, right? I mean, that's just logic. They don't think he's that great, and they don't think he fits his system. And then there's other things also involved with it, and we've kind of touched on those in the past. But they're not just going to go and say, well, 24/7 says he's a five-star and he's number two in the nation. Well, we got to recruit him. That's sort of, I think, what Clay Helton is saying there. He wants to put his evaluations into watching film. He wants to put his evaluations into going and seeing kids in person and obviously having them attend the elite camps and the Rising Stars camps.
All right. Thanks for that one, Don. And let's see. Let's move on to David. Excuse me. He said, first, in light of the decision to retain Coach Clay Helton, I'm wondering which of the kids who are committed to or interested in USC are now more likely to sign with USC? You want to start with that first, or?
Yeah, okay. I mean, we talked about Brew McCoy.
Yeah.
I think Clay Helton being retained, I think that definitely helps them with Brew McCoy. I think it helps them with, obviously, the guys that are already committed because they committed, and I think a majority of those players really like Clay Helton, and they had a good relationship with Clay Helton. Laiatu Latu is another player that really likes Clay Helton. Clay Helton really likes him. He's the 6'5", 240-pound weak side defensive end, outside linebacker from Carmichael Jesuit High School up there. He took an unofficial visit to USC during the Notre Dame game. I think that's a guy that, you know, USC is in a good position with and really likes Clay Helton. I think a majority of the local players that are in Southern California like Clay Helton as a head coach. They just like that he's a very sincere man, and they feel like he's trustworthy, and he feel like he's a player's coach. You know, he may be too much of a player's coach. I mean, I think that's sort of been some criticism behind the scenes that maybe, you know, the inmates are running the asylum, so to speak. The one thing I can say about Helton that I think a lot of people presumed, and I don't know, maybe it was sort of they tried to get the narrative going because they thought it added to reasons for him to be fired. I don't think he ever lost the locker room. Okay, I think in terms of the players playing for him and wanting to play for him, I never got the sense, and I never heard that he lost the locker room. I think there's a difference between saying the inmates are running the asylum and losing the locker room. So what the difference is here, when you say that maybe the players are sort of running the coach a little bit too much, they still love him. They still want to play for him. They still feel comfortable in that environment. But maybe they have a little bit too much say over how things are going, right? Like maybe the coach is opening up dialogue on certain topics that he should just be making mandates on and saying, okay, this is how we're doing things. Not, this is open to discussion. I think there's been some criticism there. But I do not think that the players ever felt like, screw this coach, we don't trust him anymore, we don't like him anymore, we don't want to play for him anymore. I think if that was the case, they would never have come back against Arizona State. Okay, they were getting blitzed by Arizona State at halftime. There's no way that team goes in the half and decides to play their ass off to try to stay in that game. And really, they should have won that game. Now, they lost it at the end, mainly because of, you know, the 14-point swing where you have Tyler Vaughn's drop a ball in the end zone, and then they kick the ball to Nikhil Harry at the 3-yard line. He reverses field and takes it back for a touchdown. That's why they lost the game. But yeah, those guys battled back to get back in the game. You don't play within the touchdown of Notre Dame at the end of the season when you've got no bowl. I mean, you have bowl hopes, but you're going to a crappy bowl. Your season's done. You're over with. I mean, a lot of people thought they were going to come in and they were going to get blown out by 40 points against Notre Dame. They played hard in that game. That tells me that these guys in the locker room are still playing for their coach. And so I don't think that's happening. And I think that's reflected on the recruiting trail with a lot of the local players. If the guys in the locker room did not like Clay Helton, it would reverberate, and the players locally would be echoing that. And you would see that, I don't want to play there. Chris Steele would be going, yeah, they get rid of Clay Helton. Yeah, maybe I'll start considering them. You know, Clay Helton being there is one of the reasons, along with Gavin Morris, is that Chris Steele still potentially could end up at USC. And if, like I said, they make the right hire as a defensive back coach, I would actually bet on him ending up at USC. So there's a bunch of guys like that that I think actually keeping Clay Helton for this class and even in the next class, it is helpful. He's a good recruiter. He's good in home. And I think the players, more importantly, in the locker room actually like him and they want to play for him. But that is, like I said, a difference between that and maybe the players having a little bit too much room to have control over, I guess, the direction of the program and how things go. You know, that might be an issue that's stirring, and maybe that's part of the reasons they like him, but then it's a double-edged sword because that's part of the reasons why maybe the team lacks discipline. So, you know, chew on that for a bit. That's a whole conversation in and of itself.
Yeah, the second question wants you to, like, list every player that could sign. We're not going to do that. December, like, that's, go look at the target list and stuff. We're not going to talk about 50 players in one question, especially when
every player that could sign into, you mean the early signing period?
Though. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, you know, Thibodeau is going to be an early signee. Chris Steele is going to be an early signee and an early enrollee. Like I said, Siaki Ika is going to be an early signee. I don't believe he's an early enrollee, but I believe he's signing in December. There's going to be a few players that are going to sign that may be on the fence right now about signing. It really kind of depends. Like I said, it's kind of the week up into, you know, the signing period. You're not 100% sure. Satatawa Lamia, the offensive lineman from Eisenhower High School, or Eisenhower High School in Rialto, I went to go see him a couple weeks ago. Really good player, really good offensive lineman. He's going to sign during the early signing period. So there's going to be a few guys that are definitely going to be early signees that USC has to get on top of. I don't have like a concise list right now. But yeah, there's going to be some dudes. It's going to be one of those things. I think, you know, the couple weeks leading up, you're going to see guys are going to start to feel like, you know what, all these in-home visits, because this is really when the pressure begins to build. The guys think that the recruiting pressure is a lot during the summer. It ain't nothing compared to when you start to get into December, and certainly when you get into January, when these schools, especially the lesser schools that are sort of trying to make a name for themselves on their recruiting class, they really put a lot of pressure, man. They really put a lot of pressure, and the kids start to feel it. And that's why the early signing period, it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's just sometimes they just relieve themselves to the pressure and they go ahead and they sign. They really shouldn't be. You know, they really shouldn't sign, but it's because of the pressure. And so it's one of those things that anytime a school believes that they're going to lose a kid permanently, they're going to do everything they can to try to make sure that they're still involved in them and that recruitment. So that's why, you know, some kids just decide, you know what, I'm over this. I'm just too many calls. I can't even pick my phone up and call anybody because the phone's just buzzing out of control. I know how that's like. That was like my phone yesterday.
Nice. David's last part was, how do you explain the disconnect between recruits who react so favorably to Coach Clay Helton's retention in the majority of the P posters? Is it as simple as kids not caring as much about the results on the field as fans do? And I mean, David, it's like, these are prospects. You're a fan of USC football. They're looking for their future. I mean, it's just, you have very different views on this whole thing. If USC loses now, that doesn't have any impact on them, where you're looking down. They want to see what they could do down the road. They don't want to lose when they get there, but losing a game when they're a senior in high school doesn't mean as much as it does to you who's been a fan for 10, 20, 50 years, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. And I would add, certainly, they feel like they can be a part of the solution, and they want to be a part of a solution because that obviously they can contribute. They can do something to kind of change the tide of things, and sometimes that's a good selling point. They feel like they can go in there and be a part of a resurgence. You know, USC's good more than they're bad, and now they're bad. I can be a part of them turning it around and being good, and that would be, you know, even bigger for me. I'd be making an even bigger impact on the team. So they look at it from that standpoint, that they actively can change how things are going. Well, obviously fans can't. Fans are sitting back passively, and they have no control over the situation, quite frankly. And that's hard for them. And they vent and they get frustrated over things because they really realize they don't have any control. Now, obviously, some of the fans have gotten to the point of, you know, putting ads in newspapers and flyovers. You know, they are trying to get more active into the future of the football program. But in terms of on the field, they have absolutely no control over what goes on. And so it's a different mindset. Also, I think, you know, one of the big things with recruiting and just recruits in general and how they view things. The second thing is, they actually talk to the coaches, and they talk to the coaches regularly. They have regular contact with the coaches. So they constantly hear what's going on behind the scenes. They have a lot more insight into the direction of the program than the fans do, because the coaches, let's be honest with you, and I think Coach Helton is kind of very guilty of this, you get a lot of generalization, coach speak, and sort of almost it's a patronizing tone as to what's going on. You know, we have to look at the film. We have to do this. We have to do that. And it's just sort of these generalities that you get floated out there. There's no real, okay, let's get at the heart of the matter. Let's talk about this. I think with the kids, they're probably a little more realistic, and they actually get into more specifics of what's going on. And again, they convey, look, this is how you can contribute. And when you get here on campus, this is how we're going to do things differently. And so that constant communication and that connection, that's something that I think the players and obviously the prospective recruits have that the fans don't get.
All right. Sorry about that. Got a little bling. Cool. Thank you for that. Let's go Rich in La Mirada. Love the show. Not loving the mood. I feel weird. As a lifelong fan, this is getting tough. We no longer win, or worse, recruits don't think of our school until it's brought up to them. Scary times. Hearing no practice, no subbing talent in and out to stay fresh since we are said to be so talented. I'm not sure what he's saying here. Things got to get fixed. Tommy Trojan now carries a tear on his now. Wow. This is Rich. You need a carries like the proper name carries CARRIES instead of carry CARY a tear on his face. Love the show. Thoughts on recruiting. Rick from La Mirada. Sorry, Rick.
You can't
I've been
make
talking
fun
a lot
of the listeners, Ryan. Come on, this is not a spelling contest.
This was okay. A typo fest from Rick, and I don't even think there's a question in there.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I guess to just okay, what's the feeling on recruiting? Is it as bad as I feel right now? It's going to be. It could be a very mediocre class. It could be like, you know, a top 20. Kind of classish, you know, like 22. I think, what are they? 20. I don't even know
29.
What they are right now.
It was 29. I think was the last one.
29. Yeah. I mean, it could be sort of a mediocre 18-ish, 17-ish sort of thing, or it could actually be pretty good. I think, you know, everybody is ready to, it's kind of like with the beginning of the season when they start out slow, everybody thinks, oh, this is going to turn into 5-7. Now, this year it did turn into 5-7, but in previous years it hasn't, and it hasn't on the recruiting trail either. And we've seen USC be able to dig themselves out of ditches even with some mediocre seasons. Now, this is not just a mediocre season. This is a bad season. So the question is, does the stability of keeping Clay Helton help them solidify a better recruiting class? It's not a great recruiting class right now. It's a kind of a mediocre recruiting class. They have to build on top of it. There's not, in terms of options, a ton of great options at certain positions. We talked about defensive backs. It's just not that year where you're going to bring in a bunch of guys. Unless you bring it in, you know, Corey Raymond from LSU as a defensive back coach or somebody that has a bunch of commits, you know, that and he has this great relationship with those guys, and then you just bring them to USC and boom – there you go. You've got a bunch of guys from outside the region that are willing to go to USC, and you sort of change the direction of or really kind of you increase the talent pool that you would normally have by just getting a guy that is a regional guy. I don't think it's going to happen, but you never know. I think really what USC wants to do, like I said, hire a guy that perhaps has some good relationships with local recruits. You're able to supplement maybe with a couple guys that are maybe committed to another school, or you're able to just solidify with what you have. Again, USC's plan A at defensive back is not out of reach yet. I think with offensive line, that's going to definitely be the, that's a big question for me is offensive line. It, can Drevno make up enough ground to be able to sign some of these guys that USC started to lose ground on when it was kind of the mid season and Neil Callaway wasn't really recruiting any of these guys? That's really going to be the big question for me. I think receiver, they'll still be good. I think you're still going to get a five-star guy like Brew McCoy. I think, you know, they could still be very good on the defensive line. That's a big question as well. You really want to just kind of close with the guys that USC was in a good position for. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Linebacker, you know, you signed six last year. You're not going to have a bunch of linebackers. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. That's kind of how the team goes. You know, you've got your two tight ends there. Quarterback is not, you're not going to probably go sign. Here's an interesting thing. And this is, I'm just really kind of just thought of this right now. You do have Jaden Daniels floating around out there. Now, Jaden Daniels has kind of dodged, I think, a lot of the talk that he was heading to one school. You know, UCLA became the school that, you know, oh, his mom likes UCLA, he's going to go to UCLA. Then it became Utah. Arizona State has crept in recently. The feeling has been the place that has the least amount of competition in front of him is probably where he would want to go. And obviously with JT Daniels there, that sort of put USC in a handicapped spot. They sort of started to fade as JT Daniels became more apparent as the starter as a freshman. But if you were to bring in a guy like Cliff Kingsbury, who runs a different kind of offense, an offense that, you know, maybe Jaden Daniels is more interested in and likes and kind of can get caught up in that, that would be kind of an interesting move there. I don't know if you're bringing any quarterback in this class. It's just like, you know, generational type talent. This is not a great quarterback class either. It's really the class is built on receivers, offensive linemen, and, you know, running back, obviously they want to close there too. I think they've got two pretty good running backs. They would have liked to have gotten Zach Charbonnet from Oaks Christian. That's not going to happen. It really, you know, he committed to Michigan early. He's got a connection to Michigan. And unless Harbaugh was going to kind of be on the hot seat, they just weren't going to be able to make up that ground, at least from what I understand. You know, again, they do have to hire a running back coach. And that's another position where you really need a good recruiter. Like, you got to have a good recruiter. Tim Drevno was an offensive line coach, and he was recruiting the running back position. And I just don't think that there was that vibe there. Now, they did pretty well, and I think most of that had to do with T. Martin and Gavin Morris and sort of just, you know, the generalities of having USC. And certainly with Jordan Wilmore, he just kind of always wanted to go to USC. With Keenan Christian, that was a little more work. Drevno was involved with that. Ziskin was involved with that. And so you want to keep him committed too. So you got to bring in somebody that can vibe. But I think, again, it's almost because you had Drevno there and you felt like he was sort of one foot with the running backs, one foot with the offensive line. If you bring in a guy that's a good recruiter, that's sort of all positive there. You know, it's sort of like with the defensive back coaches. You know, you have a lot of supplementing going on at that position. You bring in a real dog as a recruiter, a real good recruiter. Wow. I mean, you don't know what could happen. Now, I think with this class, unless you're bringing in somebody from outside the state, outside the region, and he has some type of relationship with somebody like Trey Sanders or some big time running back from out of state, I don't necessarily see you bringing in a third running back that's going to be this big time player. All of this stuff, it's hard to say with a lot of confidence until some of these hirings are made. I mean, if you bring in a guy like Dylan McCullough and he comes in, he may have some, you know, on the low running back that, you know, not a lot of people are looking at from the Midwest or from the South or from somewhere. And he comes in and he supplements and he's, you know, another big time player. Now, from a ranking standpoint, it's not going to necessarily reflect, but, you know, at the end game, they may be getting a guy that's a player that ends up being a big impact player for them down the line. It just depends. It just depends on, you know, you bring in college guys. Are you trying to bring in some retreads from somewhere that some other coach knows? The one thing we've seen from Clay Helton, which we've been critical of and will continue to be critical of because, you know, I think it's a big deal. the example there with Dylan McCullough comes up time and time again, going outside of his comfort zone to get qualified coaches. Don't just go after the guys that you know. You know he hasn't been involved with enough programs that have been successful to just cherry pick guys that he has relationships with. I understand that sort of coaching. Nepotism is huge in coaching, but that's why when you have a coach and a head coach that's able to do that successfully, he's gone through multiple programs and been involved in multiple franchises that have been successful. You know, Nick Saban had been in a lot of places before he came to Alabama where he was successful, and he had coaches that he coached with, so he could go back through that Rolodex and pick up on those guys and go, well, hey, I have a relationship with him from here. Clay Helton's been at Memphis, and he's been at USC. That's pretty much it. I mean, as far as being a guy that's a decision maker, you know, Memphis and USC, that's really it. So that's a very small tree to be able to pick your coaches from. You have to be able to go outside and venture out and go after the Dylan McCulloughs that are guys that have the resume. They're qualified. It's just, wow, okay, what are the things that I want from a coach? And start checking the boxes. Young guy, good recruiter. Wow, he's energetic. He's got a good personality. Holy crap, he developed these guys into NFL players at Indiana, and they've gone on to the NFL from Indiana. Where were these guys ranked when they were coming out of high school? Wow, he's got an eye for talent. So he's a good evaluator too. You start to check those boxes. I think if Clay Helton can do that, I go back to something I said at the beginning of the season, which I got a lot of pushback on. I got a lot of negative feedback, a lot of criticism. I think Clay Helton can win at USC. Now, we have to define what that means. How much does he win? Because he win national championships? I would say no. I'm skeptical of that at this point. Can he get the team to multiple Rose Bowls? Yeah, I think he can. If he goes out and gets more guys like Dylan McCullough, yes, I think he can. And so that's going to be the big deal. That's going to impact recruiting. And obviously it's going to impact recruiting now with this class, but it's going to impact the recruiting going forward. So they can definitely gain some ground here, and they can definitely make some moves just by hiring really a good recruiter at defensive back and a good recruiter at the running back position.
All right. We're going to end it up with Big Nick from Cyprus. With the UCLA's victory over USC, do we have to worry about them trying to steal top USC prospects that were leans to USC?
Yes. And no, yes, there is one particular recruit that is a must get for USC that they might be slipping with, and that's Sean Ryan, offensive tackle from San Juan Hills and San Juan Capistrano, the only guy that actually had a very good relationship with Neil Callaway, incidentally. Not a lot of offensive linemen really mentioned Neil Callaway like that. He seemed to be the one recruit that kind of had a pretty good relationship with Neil Callaway. Now, he likes Drevno too, and he really likes Clay Helton. But that's one guy that I think UCLA has made up some ground on in the last few weeks that I think was kind of really more of a heavy lean to USC. So that's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. That's going to be a battle there. And so we're going to see how Drevno and really I think this is going to be something where the staff has to really come together and sell the future, because, you know, you got Chip Kelly there and they had a horrible season. It was a disaster. There's a lot of questions with UCLA, a lot of questions. People can say, well, you know, it was a throwaway year and Chip Kelly didn't have his guys in and yada, yada, yada. There's a lot of questions about whether Chip Kelly can do what he did at Oregon and kind of try to reinvent the wheel a bit. So, and their defense is bad. There's a lot of questions there. So, what they're going to sell is, yeah, you know, great, man, we beat USC with a bunch of guys. We're only playing with 60 guys, and we don't even have our guys in yet. And, yeah, once we get rolling, we're going to be unstoppable, blah, blah, blah. So USC has got nothing to say other than, yeah, we had a freshman quarterback, and, you know, we don't know what happened. We were looking forward to the Notre Dame game. Who knows what the excuse is. But so with a guy like that they are at a disadvantage because they lost to UCLA. They have probably other guys, I think more in the 2020 class potentially, that they're battling out. The one thing that helps them, and this is the reason why I think it's not quite as impactful, is that UCLA really just is not recruiting well. It doesn't seem like Chip Kelly and the staff is necessarily really resonating with those recruits for whatever reason. I mean, I ask kids a lot about UCLA, and especially if they're younger kids in the 2020 class, you know, okay, you know, you want to hear from LSU, you want to hear from Florida, you want, you know, all that kind of stuff going on. But you're an LA kid with USC and UCLA, kind of what's your opinion? And they talk about USC and they talk about UCLA and like, oh yeah, I went to a UCLA game. Okay, what's your opinion of the coaching staff? And it just, you kind of get this vibe. It's like, wow, you know, some kids just do not vibe with the UCLA coaching staff for whatever reason. And so that's sort of helping USC. And certainly I think, you know, Chip Kelly's like, nah, whatever, you know, my system is going to recruit itself. This is what I did at Oregon. And so I'm going to do that here. I don't care. I'm not going to go out there and kiss ass. I'm not going to go out there and just, you know, I'm going to text kids and do the whole, that's not my thing. It's never been my thing. We're just going to be here and we're going to win football games. Now, obviously when you only win 3 games during the season, it's hard to do that. But they did beat USC, and that was huge. That was their season. And we talked about that on the podcast. That became their season probably mid-year. I think they probably put a lot into that game. They probably were installing stuff for USC probably 3 or 4 games before they even played USC, because that's a big game for them. That's an impactful game for them. You know, getting beat by these other teams and losing these other teams, whether it's Arizona State or whoever, it didn't matter so much. But you know, they put a lot in that USC game. And they've lost more games towards the end of the season that were close. You know, they played Stanford pretty hard. They played Arizona State pretty hard. They beat USC. So there's something to definitely build on there. And again, I think with Chip Kelly, with his attitude, and from what I've heard, I think it's, you know, that's what we're going to recruit with. We're going to recruit with our system. We're going to recruit with the product on the field. We're not going to run around and just try to sell the program and be likable. That's just not what we do. That's not who we are. So from that standpoint, in the immediate future, because UCLA was obviously bad this season, it's probably not going to impact this particular class so much. But if UCLA begins to win, then it does. Then it, if they beat USC, you know, years going forward, and even if they don't and they're just still good and they're able to win 8 and 9 games, then kids are going to start looking at them more seriously, and they'll probably overlook the fact that maybe they're not the most, you know, personality gregarious coaching staff when it comes to recruiting.
One last thing from Nick. He wanted to know, is this class going to be worse than the 2012 class? That was the...
It could be. I mean, it could be, because that was a small class, remember. That class was, I think, 18 strong in September and was number one in the nation. So this class has never sniffed number one in the nation. It's never sniffed. I don't know if it's even sniffed the top 10. So it could be definitely a very sort of, like I said, mediocre. I can't remember what that class ended up being, but it was a small class.
Yeah,
this has got to be a bigger class.
National rank 8th, Pac-12 rank 2nd. So it had, there's 14 enrollees: Jabari Ruffin, Max Turek, Zach Banner, Jordan Simmons, Gerald Bowman, Jalen Cope Fitzpatrick, Darius Rogers, Scott Felix, Kevon Seymour, Davion Shelton, Jaleel Pinner, Morgan Breslin, Chad Wheeler, and Ryan Dillard. And then I don't know if Nelson Aguilar and Leonard Williams, it says they're signed letter of intent. That they must have been in that class too.
Well, wait a second. Are we talking about that class, or are we talking about Sue Craven's class, where it sort of fell apart there after the Sun Bowl, where you had Jalen Ramsey, you had...
So that would be 2013, right? That was, would that be 2013?
Yeah, I'm not, maybe you're mixed up here, but
maybe he meant the 2012 season. Okay, that one. Yeah, so the 2013 class was nationally ranked 13th, 2nd in the Pac-12. That was Kenny Bigelow, Max Brown, Leah McQuay, Ty Isaac, Chris Hawkins, Stephen Mitchell, Justin Davis, Michael Hutchins, Khalil Rogers, Quentin Powell, Nico Fala, and Sua Cravens.
And you think, I mean, that's a quality class. I mean, there's some guys there that played for USC and did a good job for USC. I mean,
the year before was worse as far as like departures and stuff. The 2012 one was.
And guys that actually, but there was ranked higher. So I think the question is about the class that sort of was number one in the nation. And then because they had that year where they went 7-6 and lost in the Sun Bowl, it sort of fell apart on them. The big thing is that they had some early enrollees. They had Sue Cravens and Chris Hawkins, and they had a group of those guys, Max Brown, that were early enrollees, and they were, you know, kind of sort of getting them in, and it was a really little too late to start looking at other schools. And so they were able to get that core group in early. But it was a very small class, and it was a class that sort of self-destructed to some extent. You did have, you know, Eddie Vanderdoes, you had Jalen Ramsey, you had a few guys that decommit, but it was a quality over quantity class. This is going to have to be a quantity class, and that could be good or it could be bad. It could be good because if you, like I said, you hire the right coaches at some of these key positions, you're going to be able to make up some ground. You're going to be able to do some things. Maybe you even, like I said, expand the talent pool. You bring in a guy from some other school that's got a commitment, and boom, all of a sudden, wow, okay, you've got a guy that's a high four-star. All of a sudden, it's looking at your school that would never, ever look at the school. Otherwise, he's not a regional guy. He's not a guy that has a relationship with the staff, wasn't being recruited by the staff previously. Or you could, you know, go and hire guys that are just guys that Clay Helton knows and likes, and they're completely out of sorts, and they're from smaller schools, so they're not really bringing any recruits with them, and maybe they don't really know what recruiting at this level is like, and that would obviously not help them out very much. They're not going to gain traction with some of these guys they have to close with to be able to move closer into being a top 10 class, stealing away, obviously, you know, kids that are committed to other Pac-12 schools. I mean, that's obviously a big question, and that's what the Pac-12 is probably nervous about as a conference, is USC going and cherry-picking position coaches from them, you know, whether it be going to Oregon and cherry-picking a guy like Dante Williams that could very much call into question some of the commits that they have. Going and taking maybe a guy like Gerald Alexander away from Cal and taking maybe some commits away from them, or helping, you know, close the deal with other guys like Chris Steele, because I know he has a good relationship with Gerald Alexander. That kind of stuff that you kind of have to, we just have to wait and see what happens. That could definitely change the tide of things. So it could go either way. I could see it being, like I said, a class that sits just right outside the top 20. Even with that, you know, with 24 signings, you just basically have a bunch of guys that you bring in and say, well, we just have to sign somebody. And you see all these offers going into just these random sort of cusp type recruits. And we've seen some talk, you know, there's been some offers there lately that there's some guys you kind of question, is that a USC level guy? But if you're able to bring in coaches that are able to close the deal, and more so coaches that even have prior relationship with good recruits, and then you add the USC brand to that, you could see them, you know, have a bunch of guys that decide to line up and say, hey, you know, I want to play for this coach. I want to come to USC now.
All right. Let's go to wrap it up. We went an hour and 40 minutes. That's a long time.
Boom.
That's long. So let's, yeah, we'll end that all. But wait, thanks for everyone. This is our second Trojan Blast recruiting podcast in November. We'll probably do more of them now because obviously the season is over. We'll have more time to do things like this. So hope you guys enjoyed it. Gerard, thanks for coming on and sharing all your insights.
Welcome as always. And hey, man, next time we'll make it 2 hours. And you know what? People on the peristyle will not complain.
No, they love it. They love the length. That's good. All right. Well, that's Gerard Martinez.
That's interesting.
The podcast length. That is Gerard Martinez. Go back to playing Division or whatever you're doing, man. Gerard Martinez.
Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead Redemption. Pet the dog or pet your horse, whatever you got to do in that. That's Gerard. I'm Ryan. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.